So today's an exciting topic. It's pay equity. Okay, I know you might be thinking that's not exciting, but there are so many places passing pay equity legislation right now that this is something we need to know about in HR. Let's find out why and find out what it means. And here we are on the HR Hub podcast with me, Grit Adams. Keep listening to learn about this and anything related to HR. You can also find me on YouTube. So today my guest is Sally Loftus. Sally is the Managing Director of Loftus Partners. She's an HR consultant. She specializes in OD, social justice, and in particular, pay equity, which is what we're interested in today. Hi, Sally. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for coming on. I did think this was going to be dull, but now I don't think it's going to be dull because there's so many places passing this kind of legislation. Okay. But we're going to do basic pay equity here. What is it? What is pay equity?
Yes, that is a great starting question. And I will say, I don't think pay equity is dull because most people don't think talking about pay is dull, but maybe on the HR side of it, right? You're like, oh, geez, it's like one more thing I got to do. So pay equity, how I define it, I will say there's like pay equity, pay parity are two words that get used pretty interchangeably, but mostly pay equity is going to talk about if people are getting paid comparable wages, compensation, pay, whatever word you use in your organization for doing similar jobs. And for potential demographic identities within the organization. So for instance, maybe gender or race and ethnicity. And it is the organization who's able to look at that information and see if equitable pay is happening. But also to your point, there are more pay equity and pay transparency laws and regulations coming every day.
Right. So we're going to talk about pay equity or pay transparency in a different episode. But pay equity, I think a lot of us know why this is important. It's probably hovering in the back of our minds somewhere. But can you articulate that?
Yeah, it's really about having people get paid for what they're worth in an equitable way. I will say, rarely do you see an organization out there saying, you know what, we definitely are paying men more than women, and that's our practice. You know, it's typically a lot of like implicit bias, things like that. Sometimes it's, you know, you've gone through a merger acquisition, you've kind of inherited some different compensation situations. And so equity is really about being able to pay. One is going to be a living and thriving wage. So there's like a level of that. Two is that paying wages that are equal across jobs and, you know, across departments in the organization. And then three is paying equitably kind of up the ladder, I will say. You know, if you have a hierarchical organization or even if you have like a flatter organization, providing equitable ways for people to increase their pay as they increase their responsibilities.
So you said something that I thought was a bit funny, that no organization, true, I'm sure, no organization goes out there and says, we're going to pay men more. And yet they do. Why?
Ooh, there are several answers within that. Let me try to get some bullet points and not go down rabbit holes yet. So one is, you know, traditionally, I will say in the job market, the people who are rewarded with pay or given pay increases or paid the higher amounts are the people with the most education and the most work experience. Whenever you look at the past, you could even say 100 years, you can even say the last decade, you know, of history, the people who have had access to that education and that experience have not been everyone, right? Has not been equitable. There's also been, you know, there's a piece of, for instance, people who step out of the workforce for caregiving responsibilities, whether it's for children, older parents, adult children who need care, you know, things like that. So people who have to step in and out of the workforce for those. So it's really about equal access to opportunities, which is why we're seeing more organizations start to kind of unwind some of the job descriptions and present them in a different way of like, do you really have to have a 4-year college degree to do this job? Or are there certain skills you need, you know, or do you have to have experience in this very specific area of a sector, or can you have skills that are transferable across? Because then it opens up access to more.
So this really could go so many directions, but I will try to stay focused. Okay, what is the case for an employer to explore pay equity?
Yeah, there's definitely different streams for those case studies. So I will say one is there may be a legal one, right? They're getting sued. So that's just, you got to deal with it. I think two is that, you know, another way people come into this is that they are having a high turnover issue. Mm-hmm. And they may be like, hey, we're hiring, we can't keep people. And so then it's a conversation of, you know, lining up research in that pay is one of the key factors for people staying, is then saying, okay, could it be a pay issue? And then starting to look at that. Another piece is people who have changed their compensation structures in the last few years that have started looking at cost of living expenses. And so they may be doing, for instance, you know, merit increases, or what we call in the United States, I don't know if you call this in Canada, COLA, cost of living adjustments, yeah. COLA increases. Yeah. And are like, it's still not enough. Like, we're still kind of bleeding people. We're getting feedback. And so then it's looking at, you know, do you need to bring up your minimum pay coming into the organization, which then you would want to increase at every level? Because another way people come in is they're getting feedback from people saying it is more profitable for me to change jobs to another company than it is to stay here, because they have salary compression issues and don't know it. Those are four little streams of how people jump into the pay equity lake.
This is your whole career. Can you boil it down into 2 minutes? How do you do pay equity?
Okay, sure. I'll give you kind of three steps. Okay. This will start. One is you're going to have to look at your pay data and see how you're able to look at it. So overall pay data, a lot of times people just kind of look at the overall and you miss some of the threads that are, once you start slicing and dicing it, okay, of what you might see within kind of that tight-knit sweater of pay. And so you're going to want to be able to pull your pay data by, you know, department, gender, race, ethnicity, tenure, age, some of those pieces. And then I recommend people do a pay equity assessment, which I have a blog post that I'll send to you that people can do for free. I give the instructions on that, where you're basically starting to line up people by some of these demographic markers. And then just kind of looking at it and being curious and being like, hey, we have this job, you know, in this particular band, and everybody's kind of paid, you know, about the same. And then we have this one kind of outlier. What's going on there? What is that? You know, it's not always a bad thing if there's an outlier, right? It's just trying to say, hey, what's going on there? You know, and then trying to kind of see if you see any trends within that data. And then starting to have questions, and how that unfolds varies by organization, because it could be, hey, we just need to straight up raise our minimum pay and kind of update our salary bands. It may be like, hey, 10 years ago, this certain technology, whatever, you know, IT stuff was really hot. And so yes, we tended to pay them more.
Yes.
But that's not the truth anymore, right? We actually have an IT system that does with that, you know, so maybe we don't need to prioritize the IT as the highest paid people. Sometimes it's looking at, like, how do we make, are there ways for people to kind of grow in their salary that aren't necessarily connected to merit, you know, or some people do away with merit increases and performance, you know, ratings. But is there a way for people to kind of do growth in multiple pathways, whether it's longevity or whether it's building up a new technical skill or whether it's increasing responsibilities? So those are kind of some ways that people come out of it. No one is the same. It's really kind of what the most immediate need is, and then how far we can kind of go with resolving that.
You said in there that sometimes people get rid of merit-based pay, and I can see the problems that would come with merit-based pay, but I would think the alternative of not having any merit in pay to be worse. What are your thoughts?
Well, that is a topic I can go for days on. So I will summarize here, Andrea, and say, yes, there is a lot of hesitation out there about what I call consciously uncoupling performance ratings from pay. And there are a lot of advantages, disadvantages. Here's what I tell people is that if they're going to do that uncoupling, right, is that it's not getting rid necessarily of just this merit piece. It's actually opening up more pathways. So if you do decide to get rid of performance ratings, which I'm not a fan of performance ratings because there's so much bias and so much subjectivity in those,
okay, but
that's another podcast. Is that, you know, if you get rid of the ratings, let's say, and you're still doing a performance review process, you know, kind of going through those things, then you're looking at, are people growing, for instance, some of the pathways that people can increase their pay, as I was talking about earlier. One could be longevity, how long they're with the organization. Another one could be, are they growing in their responsibilities? You know, are they able to work more independently? Are they able, you know, did they start managing somebody this year? Are they taking on a special project? Are they growing in behavioral competencies, or are they leading some kind of employee council group? Or, you know, I mean, kind of some of those things that you can then kind of chart and say, these are some ways you can increase your pay. It may be more incremental. There may be times you could do more bigger increases depending on the project, but more incremental ways to increase your pay that allows people to kind of plan how they want to increase their pay. It's opening up to more people rather than just your top performers getting those pay increases.
Okay, can we back up one little bit first, actually? You talked about we have to, you know, cut our pay data by a whole bunch of different demographic sets. What if you don't have those demographic sets? Because there was a time where you didn't collect them because to collect them was, you know, could demonstrate bias.
Absolutely. There are certainly, I work with organizations who don't have the data. So it may be having a column kind of in the assessment saying unknown. You know, there's a group, but, you know, for instance, if we're looking at gender, maybe unknown, and just having that. One thing also that's interesting is, like, I'll work with organizations who maybe don't have that data or not asking for that data or need to update how they asked for the data. For instance, you know, it may be gender identity, they only have two options, maybe expanding that. Or, you know, race and ethnicity, they may not have a very inclusive list. You know, things like that. Sometimes that's the work. It's like, we're not even ready to do this because we don't even know who's working for us. And that depends on the organization. Like, for instance, I work with a lot of small businesses and nonprofits. Nonprofits typically have to collect that data. At least in the United States, the employment, the EEOC, Equal Employment Commission is usually asking businesses to collect that data. But you're right, not everybody has it. And so sometimes that's just the first step.
You go through and you do this on behalf of a client and you do find, you know, Joe is paid too much and Sarah is paid not enough. What do you recommend to the employer to fix it?
A lot of times I'm working with clients to also talk about, like, to potentially do employee feedback sessions, or maybe they already have some kind of surveying mechanism. And so we're trying to kind of also incorporate employee feedback into that in some way. And sometimes I come into organizations and they've never talked to their, you know, or they've never surveyed their employees. So we talk about building employee feedback loops. You know, it's, as you can tell, kind of once, you know, as I was saying, kind of pay that tightly knit sweater, is like, once you start pulling some of these threads, a lot of things start unraveling. And so I typically try to follow my client and say, you know, what does it look like the most immediate need is? Also lining up with, what is it, you know, if this is going to require more money, more time and effort from internal people, what's your capability for that? Sometimes it's saying we can only do so much this year and we work towards that. It's really trying to kind of identify what the greatest pain point is.
Okay.
And work around that. What I find most often is that people are not, their entry-level pay is not enough, or they've increased it so much and then executive pay has increased that the people between those two have got salary compression. And so they've not updated those middle people. So a lot of times it's working in that middle part of the organization to look at how can we kind of get people into kind of right size the ship there.
What tips do you have for anyone who's thinking about embarking on a pay equity project?
Yeah, I will tell you kind of my lessons learned.
Yes,
that's exactly that. Yeah, this is a great, and I'm also happy to send you, like, I have a document that has some of this in it, is that typically, you know, pay equity ends up taking longer than people want because of once you start pulling at those threads, other things start falling out. And it is a lot of also change management for an HR department. So, you know, whether it's just purely if you're going to update like your compensation philosophy and structure, that's a huge amount of change management because, you know, you have a lot of different people who need to be updated and trained and, you know, information shared. So, you know, those are pieces of it. I think also it's really important to go into it with a sense of curiosity and not judgment. There are certainly people who, that's how I approach it, but people will go out and be like, you know, well, this just confirms that this previous, you know, leader was a jerk. They did it up.
Yeah.
Whatever. You know, that's done. We're dealing with the here and now. So, you know, and just being curious of like, why do we do that? Like, it's, you know, sometimes people take it very personally. It's like sometimes just the system's not built for that and you haven't had the conversation. It's all good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the other thing is really trying to prioritize employee feedback and employee participation in the process. People hear me say employee participation, they're like, oh my God, no. But it's not, you know, let me co-create our compensation structure necessarily. Wait, it's just really having conversations and trying to open up the discussion about pay. And maybe it's you have an employee survey and you don't ask anything about pay, or maybe it's looking at your exit interview data. I am amazed at how many times I do employee feedback sessions with organizations where I literally just ask the question, like, how do you know you're being paid enough? And people will be like, no one has ever asked me that question in my business career. And it's fascinating. Like, you know, or it will be like, what are the conversations happening in your team about pay? And they're like, we don't ever talk about it like as a group. Or, you know, or I'll talk to leaders who will be like, I don't even know what my people get paid. That's not like only HR knows that. You know, I mean, it's just, so I think starting to normalize the conversations about pay is really helpful because kind of the you know, backside of that is it's a trust building action, right? People trust their organizations less and less now. So being able to say, I'm willing to have this conversation and start talking about it is showing, you know, this is a trust building action because I understand that pay means a lot to you. Mm-hmm. And not from a greedy standpoint, but from a, like, you're trying to pay your bills and take care of your family or, you know, do whatever.
That almost transitions beautifully into the next episode that we are going to do about pay transparency, but we will not go there yet. Mm-hmm. You have spoken about a few resources already, but can you summarize what, if someone wants to learn more about pay equity?
There are several resources. One is I will make sure and send to you the link to, I have a free blog post about, or I guess I have a blog post that talks about, you know, a free guide to how to do a pay equity assessment yourself. Right. And that's certainly a way that you can start and even start looking at your data. The second piece is that I've started a community called the Pay Equity Collective, which is just, it's a free community site for people to come in and you just basically have to sign up for the account. I will send that invite within the notes for this as well, for people to come in and just talk about pay equity, share about pay equity. What I have learned is that when I've worked with clients, the most successful clients are the ones who have built community with other organizations who are doing the same work, because there's not a ton of information out there. That would also be one of my tips that I left out, is building community. But, and so I've launched this new site. That there's a free portion of it where you can share resources, have conversations, things like that. But I'm also offering like a cohort model for organizations that want to do pay equity. That's like a 12-month model. So it's up to 10 organizations together, working together so they can build that community. And then I also am having a community of practice for the organizations that have already implemented pay equity so they can kind of continue. So that's like a separate cohort, but so they can continue the discussions. So really just trying to kind of build community and resource here through the Pay Equity Collective.
Well, thanks, Sally. I love that part about community. We often have community in our HR association, or they try to foster that, but sometimes it just doesn't take off. But maybe within a sector or in an industry, it might work a whole lot better. I love the idea anyways. But we have reached the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time when I talk with another insightful guest.